show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got a show for you planned. We have a special guest who will be joining us in our second segment tonight, Clint Scholes from, of course, BP Kansas City, who is your resident draft expert. We talk about him all the time. He knows more than 99% of the people that you will meet, especially those outside of the business itself. So we'll have him in our second segment to talk about the draft and kind of give a breakdown of where the Royals went. But before we get to that, we got some other Royals stuff to talk about. And before we get to that, introductions, of course. I am Jeff Herr, and the man who I would draft, number one overall, 1-1, Michael Engel. Mike, if I had to draft a podcast co-host, you'd be 1-1, Mike. So there you go. How are you doing on this evening?
I need a $7 million signing bonus or I'm going to college.
About that. I'll have to talk to Kelly, so we'll see yeah. What we can wrangle up for you.
I'm pretty good. It was 9 billion degrees today, but that's fine. I'm all right.
These things happen. We live in the Midwest, right?
Yep. Unfortunately, I was also passed over in the Major League Baseball draft for the 37th consecutive year. So the dream is still alive, but it's hanging by a thread.
So this is random. We didn't really plan to talk about it. I just got this notification on my phone. It says, woman arrested Wednesday for setting small fires on Kauffman Stadium outfield.
Yeah.
Is this something that happened today that I didn't hear about? I wasn't really tuned in all day.
I saw stuff about it. I don't know exactly when it happened, but yeah, I saw some stuff. I don't know. I saw the headline. I don't know the details about it. I don't know why or how she got into the stadium to do this. I don't know. I thought earlier that I wonder what would happen if she joined forces or maybe even battled against Fountain Lady from a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of
Fire versus water. I mean, that's a classic matchup right there.
Eternal struggle right there. But, you know, what if somebody else comes in and some lady decides she's going to dump dirt in the stadium? You know, then you get all, you know, most of the elements all together. It's like Avatar: The Last Airbender, but with Royals
and then
Royals
and then we'll throw
vandals.
In, and then we'll throw in a guy who caught the home run ball from Moose in the ALCS.
Yeah.
We'll get that guy in there just for fun.
He's the ringleader. It's his master plan.
Yes.
To get all the elemental people together. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. It's a weird story.
Yes. So anyway, that literally just happened right as we started. Didn't really plan to talk about that, so we'll move on. But that's, I guess we'll have more details on that later, maybe next week. Who knows?
Maybe updates.
That's kind of a weird notification to get from your sports app. Anyway, like I said, Royals had a draft, as did all the teams in Major League Baseball. So we'll kind of talk about that more with Clint, so we'll save the discussion for that because he's as always got a lot of great knowledge. But so otherwise, to talk about, you know, what's going on at the big league club, I think your number one story right now continues to be Brad Keller for this season. You know, we talked about him a few times already, and at first it was just kind of like, hey, this Rule 5 pick they have, he's doing all right, this is pretty cool. And then they started talking about stretching him out to be a starter, and he had a good start even though he only pitched three innings his last outing. And then yesterday he went out and pitched again and he had another good outing. This time they stretched him out a little bit more. He had 51 pitches in his first start, and then he went to 75 last night. And he had 4.1 innings, only gave up one run like he did last time, only walked out only walked one batter like he did last time, and struck out three, just as he did in his previous appearance. So two starts now that he's come out, he's done pretty well. He's looked good. He's looked under control. He's looked, they're still stretching him out. So he hasn't had a chance to go six, seven, eight innings or whatever, you know, for that you normally want from a starter. But all the same, the early returns, the early signs of what he's given us so far has been good. So, you know, it's quite remarkable what he's done. I mean, anytime you get a Rule 5 guy, if you just get someone who can contribute, then you're thinking you did pretty well, you know, just a major league player. But if you're getting somebody who can play and play really well, you know, like a Joaquin Soria, then not to make any sort of comparison other than Soria was also a Rule 5 pick. But, I mean, that's pretty great if that's what you can get. And it looks like the Royals may have found something here. And if they keep stretching him out and he keeps doing well, maybe a piece in their starting rotation for the next few years. I mean, what are your thoughts as we continue to see this development for Brad Keller here?
I think it's pretty great. I mean, this is the type of risk the Royals should be making at this stage in kind of their standing. You know, they've got innings to spare. They, you know, especially now they're 21-40, they're not going to contend. They know they're not going to contend. They knew they weren't going to contend when they started the season. I mean, despite whatever else they say, they knew it was rebuilding. You know, Rule 5 time, they took a couple of shots with Brad Keller and Birch Smith. Birch Smith hasn't worked out that well, but Keller looks really solid. You know, he was looking good in the bullpen. When he started the year, he earned some trust from Ned Yost and was playing more of a setup role. And, you know, that ended up getting him to a point where when Eric Skoglund got hurt, he was the guy to step in. And, you know, so now he's gone out. He's shown that he can go through a lineup a couple times. He can manage the pitch count. He can do all of those things that you would ask him to do as a member of the rotation. It's just a matter of getting him stretched out. You know, he'll probably be up to like 95, 100 pitches. And then, you know, that's probably about where they're at for the rest of the year for him. But, you know, he turns 23 in about 7 weeks or so, 7 or 8 weeks. You know, just to have a kid come up and just be unfazed like that, I think that's great. It's a nice little break for them because they badly need starting pitching. Jake Junis has pitched well, but he's had a couple of outings where, you know, he wasn't as sharp or, you know, kind of leaked back a couple runs late in the game, like in the last one. And some of that wasn't, you know, his last start wasn't necessarily his fault. Some of them were inherited runners that ended up scoring, but, you know, he put them on nonetheless. So other than that, Jason Hamill has not been that good. Danny Duffy has, you know, he had a couple of good starts, but his last start was a little rough again. Ian Kennedy got shelled his last time out. You know, Keller coming into the rotation where they were already kind of iffy in a lot of spots. You know, if he and Junis can really kind of, you know, keep it together, they look like a nice little duo. Now, I mean, neither of them are like ace material right now. Maybe there's some development or some tweak that gets them there, but, you know, if they're just number three starters and they're really good number three starters, that's pretty good. And they're, you know, there are plenty of team control left for both of them. They're going to be very affordable for the next couple of years. Again, you know, Keller's 22. There's a lot of room to grow there still. So I think it's a good sign. At the same time, he's yet to cross 30 innings. You know, he's an out away from getting to 30 innings. He's got to show that he can get through a lineup a third time, or at least get through the top of the order a third time and really get into that spot where he's going more than five innings, more than six innings. And then you start to see if he's got something. We kind of pointed this out in the past, strikeouts, you know, he's not really getting a ton of strikeouts yet. But he's also not giving up a lot of homers. He's not giving up a ton of hits. So he's just pitching well. And if the strikeouts are something that will come later, then that's good. And if they don't, then, you know, maybe he's just a back-end guy. But the main thing is they got him for, like, nothing. You know, and like you said, if Rule 5 pick brings you anything, You know, most of these guys by June, they're returned to their team. Most of these guys by April, they're returned to their team. So having Keller involved at all, I think it's a definite positive. It's, you know, one of the more interesting stories that we're going to follow the rest of the year, because there's not a lot of positives happening right now, but he's one of them. So I think it's great. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does his next time out.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's, you mentioned Jacob Junis, and even though he's, you know, had a couple of bumpy outings, you know, he's still doing pretty well. He's still sitting at a 3.62 ERA on the season. So if that is the pitcher that he is, and that's what you get for, you know, the next few years from Jake Junis, as the Royals are trying to build this team back up, you're absolutely going to take that. And, you know, if Keller continues his development and finds out that he can stick in the rotation, then you've got Brad Keller, Jacob Junis, and Danny Duffy as three pieces to, you know, that's three-fifths of a legitimate big league rotation. If things continue, there's so much unproven about Brad Keller. We definitely don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But, you know, this is, unfortunately, we kind of have to get ahead of ourselves because there's not a ton to talk about right now. But, you know, I mean, if you squint a little bit, that's what you can see. And he's shown enough flashes that, okay, we're allowing ourselves to squint a little bit and look, try and gaze into that crystal ball into the future. But, you know, at this point, we've seen enough from Jacob Junis to know, okay, there's a chance, there's a pretty good chance that, that he's going to be able to continue this level of play for a while. And we have enough faith. We've seen enough from Danny Duffy to know that he will bounce back, even though he, after a couple good outings, he had a bad one again a couple days ago, unfortunately. But, you know, he can still be trending towards getting back to that Danny Duffy that we know. And, you know, this year, let him work out the kinks. Let him figure out what's going on, because, you know, if he's under contract, the Royals are going to keep him and they're not going to trade him. Then they're going to need him if they want to compete in the next few years. Yep. And, you know, if the Royals, maybe they draft, the Royals drafted a lot of pitchers. Again, we'll talk about those with Clint when he comes on, but the Royals drafted a lot of pitchers
like
in this draft.
500.
Yeah, at least. So, you know, and a lot of college pitchers. So they could come up pretty quickly here. That's kind of your hope sometimes and your goal a lot of times as well with college pitchers. So, you know, if the Royals, if Brad Keller continues to develop and he's able to stick in the rotation, and the Royals essentially have three-fifths of a rotation, and they can get two of the guys that they drafted to come up and be major league pieces, or, you know, just one of them, and then be able to trade for another one, you know, or sign someone, you know, an Edinson Volquez type, or a James Shields, trade for them, that type of a thing, you know, to just fill out a rotation as they're going into a season, then they'll be in pretty good shape. So, you know, but if you have three of those five pieces already in place, it's a lot easier to fill two than it is to fill four, like they were trying to do coming into this season. Yeah. So I guess it depends on how you look at Ian Kennedy, but so
with disdain these days.
Yes. Yeah. It's very encouraging, and it's definitely the number one story for the Royals right now. You know, unfortunately, as I mentioned, the number one negative story might be Danny Duffy. Continue, you know, as is having his worst year as a pro so far, and, you know, we were kind of talking about how we'd had a couple good outings last week, and he'd, you know, been able to maybe he was riding the ship. You know, 13.2 innings pitched in two games, only gave up two earned runs in total, but goes out a couple nights ago, five innings, four earned runs, three walks, no strikeouts, just not sharp, not a very good game from him. So, you know, we'll see, I guess, how he can right the ship. But as I was saying just a second ago, you know, if this is something he needs to get through in order to get back on track to where he's, you know, back to where he was the last couple of years, or maybe even takes that step forward that we all know he's got, that one last step that he could still take as far as his ceiling is concerned, although maybe he doesn't. I don't know. Maybe he just is the pitcher that he was the last couple of years. But even if he is, you know, if he can get back to that, then you know, that he's a solid number three pitcher, maybe even a number two, for the major league. So, you know, if he needs to go through this so that he can get back to that and be back to more consistent Duffy, then, you know, this is as good a season as any to work that out, because there's nothing riding on it, you know. So just don't worry. I mean, if I'm Ned Yost, I'm saying, you know, or Kyle Eldred, I'm saying, don't worry about winning the game. Don't worry about, I mean, obviously you worry about winning the game, but you know what I mean? Like, don't go out there and fret over, you know, just missing one pitch. 'Cause it's not like in 2015 where, you know, one pitch, one inning, one game can make the difference, you know, between, you know, whether it's 2014 getting into the playoffs just by a game, or, you know, 2015, you know, when it could be you're talking about seeding, whatever. None of that stuff is, nothing's riding on that. So go out there, try and find yourself again, get back to what you were doing, and, you know, use the rest of the season to get back up to speed so that next year you can come into 2019 and just be ready to take off running. So, you know, I guess, but it's still a little disconcerting to, not a little, it's a lot disconcerting to see how poorly he's played. And it's definitely not in the Luke Hochaver territory yet, or like, no, early in his career, but it kind of has a similar feel where it was just like, you keep hoping and hoping that he rights the ship and you get a couple good performances. Okay, maybe this is it. He's turned the corner. He's getting back on track, and then he falls back. So, you know, hopefully that's not a trend and it's just kind of a couple bad months, bad half a season, something, and he can get things back together pretty quick. 'Cause it's, you know, it's rough to see any pitcher struggle like this, but especially Danny Duffy, who's been such a, you know, big piece of this team the last few years.
Yeah. And I mean, they've got a pretty big financial stake in him being better than this.
There's also that.
Yeah. But I mean, a big reason why I'm not terribly worried. I mean, his last start, don't get me wrong, was pretty frustrating. It looked a lot like Danny Duffy from, you know, the old days where, you know, he just would nibble, wouldn't get a lot of guys out, had a lot of difficulty putting guys away. That seemed like the Angels hit about a million foul balls off of him, and he was at like 30 pitches an inning. I mean, it was just, you know, a real rough start. But over the course of his career, I mean, 2011, he was rough, and he walked a lot of guys, and he wasn't that great, and he didn't strike out enough. But every other year, you know, he's been above average, including, you know, some pretty strong seasons coming mostly out of the bullpen, or doing the thing where he kind of starts in the bullpen, stretches out later. We saw that 2014 and 2016 in particular. He had really good seasons. And in 15 and 17, where he was, you know, a little bit more relied upon as a starter. You know, okay. This, I think, hiding mechanical things. You know, I think ultimately his overall numbers at the end will not be, but I think probably, you know, 17, 20, then in, gotta go to the channel. I don't worry too much. Is kind of fear those things around the leaf that I think of then will click. I'd say in weeks, you know, yeah, we're sitting there to turn around. It's tough. I mean, I guess if he's geared to do it, fake competitive, you still don't want to see him.
No,
that's kind of,
yeah, not to, that never happens. A notification, this one you'll be of interest. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but Russell John Jay to the Gabe Stralbo.
Oh,
yeah. John, yeah, hey, we knew when they saw that he was going to be, you know, I don't know the right word, but we're going to hope he had a good first half or first part of the season. I mean, happened. He's played really well. He's hit and heard him. They decide.
I know they're for him.
Yes. So I know, I'm sure Clint and Les will too on that word, but it's pretty interesting. You know, stuff is already, it's a good point. You know, yeah, there's the trade. It's fun and it starts happening. But, you know, team here, like the Mariners, who have made trades recently. You know, team who, right, so they've, yeah, we talked about the business getting off a mert and look like came to Earth. And the Mariners go and they move and get this tier leave. And, or if you're the wrong, you know, get it, the world's best. If you're a company, doesn't matter, you, why not get them in the middle of June and get an extra 6 weeks out of them where you can get an extra couple wins maybe because of that player, as opposed to waiting until August where you've only got the last, you know, 2 months of the season where they can make a difference. It's there's the logic is there that if you're going to make a move, don't wait. Just go make the move. I mean, the fear is that you overpay and you get screwed on somebody or you know, something happens, whatever. But, I mean, you can't live in that fear when you're competing for, you know, depending on what your situation is and how the season's shaping up, you know, you can't live with that fear. Sometimes you got to just go for it. It's what the Royals did in 15 and it paid off. So that's interesting. I hope this, I hope it opens up the floodgates for the Royals to start getting, getting things going. And yeah, cause I mean, John Jay, I mean, Lucas Duda, Mike Moustakas, you know, and then Kelvin Herrera, obviously those are the ones that are for sure likely going to go. But you know, then also there's people will say the Royals have definitely not indicated in any way that they would trade away a Salvador Perez, but I got to think that you'd
the
at least
right
listen.
Deal came around. Yeah. You would have to,
I definitely don't want to see Salvador Perez go, but he's a very, very big chip if the Royals decided to push it in to the table and, try and cash in on that. Cause if they're, I mean, if they're really good looking for this window, then that's a way to go about it. But anyway, that's bit of breaking news which will no longer be breaking at all by the time you listen to this.
No, but it's fun now.
You can relive it. You can relive the moment John Jay was traded when you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, the only thing I've got is Elvis Luciano is 18 years old. He's from the Dominican, 6'2". He pitched mostly in the Dominican League last year, but he did make a couple of appearances at the rookie ball level as a 17-year-old and held his own, you know, 7 strikeouts per 9, 2.4 walks per 9. So, you know, there's maybe something happening there. Pretty interesting kind of pickup there. Gabe Spire, Rustin Dodd says he's going to report to AA. 23-year-old, he's also a pitcher. Also pretty decent numbers. Don't really know a ton about those guys. But I think this move's probably coming in conjunction with a couple of other things happening. Earlier, the Royals picked up a guy named Rosel Herrera, who had made his major league debut with the Reds but was waived. They picked him up, and they added I forget who they added to the 60-man DL. I believe it was – maybe it was Nate Carnes, who's already spent 60 days on the DL, to open up a 40-man spot, and he doubled and tripled in Omaha last night. So that's somebody that, you know, maybe if they need to fill a gap, he comes up and does that. Also, at the end of this month, Jorge Bonifacio comes back from suspension. So he'll be available. So the Royals now have traded an outfielder. They've got an opportunity to bring a couple guys, you know, back into the fold, either, you know, Bonifacio in about, 3 weeks, or maybe Herrera comes up and he can fill that spot. So it makes total sense. Like, if the deal is out there, like, it must be, I got to figure that the big piece is this Luciano. You're picking an 18-year-old kid. You know, I found a scouting report from last October on the internet. 91-92 range with a fastball, mid-80s changeup, repeatable mechanics, fastball touch 94, threw a curve about 78, thick lower half, so there could be more velocity down the line. That is reported by the baseballbellcurve.com. So that's all the information I've got. I would point to Clint Scholes, who will probably be able to find more information, and will not do so on the fly. It's not like we're recording this like live and broadcasting live. We could definitely stop and research, but you know, this is what you get. It's free. It's a free podcast. We don't have a Patreon.
Yes. Yes, we will have more information for you next week, as will Clint Scholes and David Leske in the meantime, I'm sure, on VP Kansas City. So, so that was fun. That's kind of cool. Always good to have stuff that kind of breaks during the podcast, even if it's not new when you hear it. But fun to have it go with the show. So with the pitching, you know, we've kind of talked about, well, I mean, the Royals in general, I mean, you know, they're playing baseball games.
Yeah.
There's that. I mean, they've lost three straight after winning three out of their last four, or three out of their previous four, or four out of their previous six, I guess. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, there's not a ton to say right now. We've talked about the exciting aspects. I mean, you know, you've got, I guess we could talk about, you know, Jorge Soler continue. He fell back to earth a little bit after his really hot stretch, but he's starting to pick it back up again. And he's still having a really solid season. He's up to 9 home runs now.
Yep.
Moose has 12. Salvador Perez has 10. So, you know, despite that, the Royals are the least, or had the least amount of home runs in all of baseball. So there's that. And
they've allowed the most.
Yep. There you
it's
go.
Great. They've allowed 90 home runs. And for example, the Boston Red Sox have the second most homers in baseball with 90. The Yankees have hit 96. So there you go.
Yep.
That's the level that this the pitching staff has been. But yeah, the hitting hasn't been good either. I mean, the last week has been pretty rough. I mean, they got shut out 16-0. Then they lost last night on a one hitter, lost 1-0. They did win a game, but they lost you know, another game against the Angels where they had a lead and then they blew it. So even when they've gotten opportunities, it just hasn't really come around. I mean, they hit a lot of double plays. The league in double plays hit. They're mm-hmm. at the bottom of the league. Let's see, they are 13th in the American League with runners on. They are 28th in the majors in batting average with runners in scoring position. So they're getting guys on sometimes, but they just don't get them through. You know, the 12th in the American League in runs scored. They're just not playing well. They're not hitting well. They've got some guys like Salvador Perez and Elcides Escobar who are playing every single day with on-base percentages under 300, under, you know, Sal Perez is at 290, Escobar is at 282. You know, the benefit for Perez is he at least has some slugging potential, and that makes him continue to be a productive player. Alcides Escobar, you know, he's got a couple of homers and a couple of triples, but, you know, he's only hitting 233. He has seemed to walk more, but he still makes a lot of outs. And when you got that guy playing every day, even if he's batting ninth, it's a lot of outs, you know. So Mike Moustakas, his on base is only 323. I feel like that could be better. Alex Gordon has had an up and down season. His on base is 315. That could be better. So when you really look at it, you've got, you know, well, now two pretty good performers. I would have added John Jay, but I can't now. Whit Merrifield and Jorge Soler, both of those are getting on base more than 36% of the time. Both of them are in the upper 20s in their walk totals. Not to say that walks are everything, but these are also guys who are hitting the ball. They're slugging the ball. They're doing things. You know, Soler has power. Whit has speed. So they're doing that and they're walking. And, you know, they're contributing in a big way. You know, other guys, not so much. Moose, his slugging has been there. And that's helping him quite a lot. He's got a lot of doubles, 12 home runs, leads the team, 40 RBIs, also leads the team. So I'm not saying that Moose is, like, struggling or dragging anybody down. He's got the second-best OPS plus on the team. But it's just not enough right now. You know, the Royals are in many games at a risk to get shut out or score only one or two runs. And with their pitching staff, you just cannot afford that. And you know, that's how you get to be 21-40 in the first week of June.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been a kind of pattern to talk about, you know, the Royals and their lack of power, and they've been able to make it work in that window they had because they were, you know, putting the ball in play. They had, even though they weren't specifically walking a ton, they were still getting on base a decent amount, but you know, those days are gone. And it's when you those days are gone for the Royals, I should say, but when you can't put up, you can't hit a lot of home runs, and you can't get the guys, when you get guys on base, you can't get, I mean, these are all just recipes for, it's not breaking any news to say it's recipes for not winning a lot of games, but you know, it's, that's where the Royals are at. And it's just, it makes for, to be quite honest, not the most fun baseball to watch, on a daily basis. And, you know, it's, I don't know. There's not a ton that you can say. They kind of are what they are, because even though there's, you know, we can break down what all the players are doing right now. I mean, there's no real surprises in there. Like, no. You know, Moose, you talked about, I mean, Moose is having, you know, he started off really hot, and he's having a very typical Moose-like season. You know, he still could hit that 40 home runs, which, you know, cross my fingers, if he stays with the Royals for the whole season, that'll happen. Merrifield is giving you a very Merrifield-like season.
Yeah.
Jorge Soler, I don't know if he'll keep up where he's at currently for the rest of the year, but if he does, this is what we wanted from Jorge Soler. So he's, you know, he would be that type of guy. So, you know, which would be put him right around 20, 25 home runs with, you know, 850-ish OPS. I mean, good. Take that. I'll take it all day long. So, you know, Salvador Perez, he's given you that Salvador Perez type season so far. You know, so that's kind of what makes it so hard to talk about sometimes, just because, I mean, when Soler was on the hot streak, that was fun. Because it was okay, you know, he's looking like a premier hitter. Now he's come back to earth, and it's just everyone's kind of doing what they thought they would, or what we thought they would. And the unfortunate part is, well, we thought because of that, that they would have a bad, that they would, you know, not be doing very well in the win department. And that has also come to fruition. So,
yep.
You know, they're 21-40, and I can't really say anyone's all that surprised, you know, and especially with the offense, as bad as they could be.
Yeah.
And it's,
I think I'm surprised that the rotation has been this bad. You would think between Hamill, Duffy, and Kennedy, one of those three could be doing about what Jacob Junis is doing. And they're all three really rough. The bullpen had that rough stretch, and they're kind of having a rough stretch now too, in some regards, you know, so I can kind of see it, but you know, maybe that makes the Royals, you know, five wins better, you know, with a little more stability. It's still not really good. You know, we both projected them to be 72-90. You know, they might be worse than that, and some of that might just be a rough April, a rough start, a rough bullpen in the first month, you know, those kind of things that you don't recover from. But at the same time, we knew all along this probably wasn't going to be a very good team. And no. They're not a very good team.
Kind of crazy that they would have to go 31-50 the rest of the way to get to 72-90. And we look at that and think, oof,
yeah,
that could be a struggle. I mean, which is essentially the same, you know, not winning percentage-wise, but, you know, they're 21-40, so they're 19 games under 500. 31-50, they'd be... Yeah, that's 19 games under 500. So, you know, essentially maintain the same win-loss gap for the rest of the season, and they could match our record. But that, when that seems like a struggle, you know, you're not in the best shape.
I just mentioned Rozel Herrera. He just homered in Omaha. So, he is seizing an opportunity right now.
Opportunity has been seized.
I guess. Interesting the timing on that, but
yes, you know. a lot of interesting timings tonight. So I think with that we'll conclude our first segment, but stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get Clint Scholes on the horn, and we're going to talk to him all about draft. So we talked about all the pitchers the Royals drafted. We're going to go in depth on a few. They got some pretty intriguing ones in the early rounds, so stick with us. Be sure to stay on. We'll have Clint. He always has just tons of amazing info and good stuff. He talks to all the coaches. He talks to everyone. So you'll definitely want to stick around for that. So sit tight, and we'll see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kaufman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Every town has a place where elites gather for witty conversations over trendy cocktails. In Kansas City, that place is definitely not Kelly's Westport Inn. From its humble beginnings at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue, Kelly's Westport Inn has seen it all. Pioneer wagon trains filled with families heading west, Civil War battles, and Major League Baseball championships. Kelly's is born of history and tradition, and we hope you'll allow us to become part of your history and traditions as well. Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road, Kansas City, Missouri.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. Folks, we have a special guest for you, as many of you probably know, and as we told you at the beginning of the show, we will be having the Royals had the draft, and as we teased last week, we're going to have our resident draft expert, Clint Scholes, on the show. We have him with us now. Clint, how are you doing this evening? Have you recovered yet from... Your Christmas, as Craig Brown put it?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I fell asleep on day two during the draft. It gets where they no longer have video. You're just doing audio, and all you're hearing is names and numbers, and I just kind of dozed off. I was like, oh. Yeah, no, I'm good now. I'm good now, though. We're good to go.
Caught up on sleep, so we're all good. So first, we'll just kind of start with some overall impressions, but let's do it that way. We'll start with the overall impressions first, and we'll kind of get into individual players. But so first observations, you know, from us, and that most people have been talking about around town, is the amount of pitchers they've selected. Just in their first 10 picks alone, they selected 8 pitchers, and there are a lot of college guys. They were all college guys. So... there have been some people kind of floating around the idea that maybe the Royals think that with their offensive weapons they have in the low A rookie ball type area of the farm system, that they're trying to get some college age pitchers that can hopefully match up with them to get to a rise at the same time to possibly open up another window. But then there are some that maybe think that's just who was available, who they liked the best that was on the board and available to them at the time. So when you look at the draft, what are your overall impressions, and is there much where do you kind of fall on that argument as far as what you know for how the Royals have approached this draft?
Well, I don't think they would admit that, but I think that's a pretty logical idea to come up with, just because when you're looking at college pitchers, especially, we'll just talk Brady Singer and Jackson Coar, because their seasons are still going. They're likely to keep going through this weekend and get into the College World Series because Florida is Florida. So so when you look at those guys, you're not going to give them much time to pitch this season. They're going to maybe pitch, you know, 2 or 3 starts maybe, if that, especially if they last a long time at the College World Series. And so then you're looking at breaking with Wilmington. Well, look at Wilmington's roster next year. Who's going to be on it? Sully Matias, MJ Melendez, Nick Prado. So you're talking about basically five of the top six Royals prospects are going to be on the same roster next year to start the year. So, I mean, the college guys should move faster than those guys. If Brady and Jackson go to Wilmington, they shouldn't last the whole season there. So they should kind of move up ahead of them. But still, then they're catching Khalil Lee, who will likely be, if he keeps hitting like he is, he's going to be Northwest Arkansas this year. But he'll likely be there definitely for sure to start next year. So I think it's a good conclusion to come up with. But the other thing that you come with that is look at the pitching that they have currently in their four systems. And it was stark that they needed pitching. And if you're going to toss a bunch of arms at it, then you might as well go with college arms that you know where they're at along the development curve. And a couple of these guys still have upside even beyond what they are. So that's good.
Yeah, that was one of the things with all these college guys that, you know, when we talked 2 weeks ago, like none of these guys were really – on the list of guys we talked about in our preview episode, because I don't think anybody expected them to really go this route. But like when you're talking about upside and college players, a lot of these guys, like almost all of them, are college juniors. So I mean, in theory, they could go back, but you know they're already ahead of some of these other kids. So the upside is going to come from, you know, Singer obviously was like a top five talent according to some. Cower, and you mentioned something today about Jonathan Bolin from Memphis. Like, are those the guys that are going to bring that upside? Some of those top five guys, or are there guys also on, you know, day two that kind of bring a little bit of that, or even further down the draft?
I think your upside guys are Jackson Coar, Daniel Lynch, Austin Cox, who they took in the fifth round out of Mercer. And then today they took a sophomore in the 13th round from Oklahoma State. To me, those are your big upside starters. Singer doesn't have much of a much more upside. Yeah, he's 6'5". He could fill out some more and his stuff can refine, but he's already got good stuff. You can tweak it a little bit here or there. He's pretty nasty competitor, so maybe he is more than what I think he is. Maybe he's Max Scherzer, just that guy that doesn't stop. You know, I mean, if you watch him scream at the clouds and
it's a great clip.
I mean, then there's another start nobody's even talking about where he about got run, where he hit a guy. He hit 30 guys in 3 years. Well, it's his play. He owns it. He lets people know he owns it. And he's yelled at umps for about running and for plunking people. He's got a competitive edge. Maybe he's Scherzer, but I'm just not going to project that. But those are the guys, the type of guy, that mentality is the type of guy that just keeps climbing over the ceiling. And so maybe he's that. But of the guys that – but the big upside, I think Jackson Coar is your big, big upside guy.
And I want to talk about for just another second. Mike mentioned some people thought he was a top five talent. And, you know, looking on MLB.com for just the Royals, looking at all the Royals draft picks, and he has the number two rank overall. So, and some people said he slipped down to 18 at the Royals. What was it about him that if he was projected to be a top five talent that, I mean, was it just that a couple teams made some different picks and things didn't fall and he kind of slid, or why was he available for the Royals at 18?
There's I don't know how much you guys follow like the videos and stuff like that. There's some video out there. There's some mechanical issues that kind of might scare some. He is a below three quarter slot guy. His slider isn't quite as tight as what it used to be. It's kind of more of a slurve right now. And there's a lot of people say he doesn't have a changeup. He just doesn't have to use it in the college game. He just never has to use it. He's got one, and it's got pretty good arm speed, pretty good fade. He's got nasty movement on all his pitches, as does Kowar. I think it's just a combination of teams. I think it's a combination of there's in the upper half in the top 10 picks, there's probably teams that just didn't see him as they saw him more reliever risk. And then after he got past, say, Oakland at 9 and 10, well, then you're looking at what the Rays did with Liberatore, is that those two teams have the weight to shove players to them. So is he the 18th ranked player? I don't think so. Is he a top 10 guy who got pushed down to 18? I think that's more likely because the Royals have the weight to do that. I'll have to corner Lonnie at some point, but that's I believe that's what happened there.
So one thing that we talked about, and you've written about this every single draft article, I think, is that the Royals had this draft pool available to them to kind of make some noise and maybe, you know, take some risks and do some other things. And they didn't really seem to do that. So, you know, is that any kind of a missed opportunity? Are there, I mean, I know they passed on some guys that you really, really liked in the first couple of rounds in the first few picks. But, you know, another thing that you said earlier today was, even though it's not necessarily like it's not a sexy draft, it could still be a good draft. So, you know, where do you fall on that scale? Like, I mean, the Royals seem like they took a pretty conservative approach to this, but they still got talent. And like you said, a number of guys with some upside.
Yeah, I shoot for the ceiling if it's me. And Nolan Gorman was the ceiling. That guy had some graded as 80 power.
And he was good.
He's on the board, but there were some concerns about him recognizing breaking balls. So there's that. That's where I would have gone, but I understand it. And when you look, I mean, I watch their minor leagues more than anybody, and they just have no pitching. I mean, they legit have 2-3 starters that are okay. And then that's about it. And then it's a tumble. I mean, it's from there on, it's really rough in what you see night to night with guys. And some guys just aren't working, like Scott Blewett and Foster Griffin. They're just not handling Double A right now. And so they need the pitching. And these guys, a lot, it really matters where you're looking, too. I mean, if you're looking at MLB, well, their third pick at 34. They take is ranked 77th, right? But if you go to FanGraphs, he's like a top 25 guy. He really came on late. Daniel Lynch, I don't like him as much as a lot of places, but I can see it. You're talking 6'6", 190 pounds already with four pitches, but for some reason he gets squared up quite a bit. So that's a concern for me. But yeah, answer your question, Mike, I think when I look at Jackson Kowar, that's the ceiling, and there's a lot of ceiling there still that people might not recognize. But overall, yeah, it's more of a conservative draft for the guys that you know they're going to bring in, and you know they're bringing in the top 10 round guys. Now they start adding some of those preps that they took towards the back half around 34th round, they started adding some prep guys. If they get two or three of those in the mix instead of just maybe one, then the draft maybe has a little bit more ceiling than what we're talking about.
Yeah, and one of those is Ty Madden, who was ranked pretty highly, and I know some people kind of remarked on him when they took him at that 34th pick. How tough a sign is that going to be? I can't imagine, you know, they're going to be able to break the bank, but is there any chance at all that someone that highly touted is able to be brought in?
It's really dependent on what their other guys are going to sign for. I think they have a pretty good relationship with Daniel Lynch, so I don't think he costs them a ton of money. I don't think Bubik does either. It's really going to come down to Kowar and Singer, what they're going to end up signing for. Do they go out and win a second national title and they just don't have the need to push anymore for Florida and they're ready to start their pro career and they'll take a little bit less And so then you can toss maybe $1.5 million at this kid and make him make a decision. That's a lot of money at that point. So we'll see. I don't know. That's what Lonnie said. You know, they've got a month to sign everybody. So I don't think we'll know about those kids until you get to the last week and Florida has already finished what they're done, what they're going to do, and you lock those kids in.
So we've talked about, and you mentioned some of the kind of high upside guy, but those are still, you know, some of the kind of higher picked players with a little bit better reputation or more known, I should say. So when you look at the rest of the draft, you know, and I think we asked you to do this last year as well, just who kind of jumps out at you as a pick that maybe people haven't really talked about a ton name wise, but someone that you think, oh, you know, they could turn into something pretty good. Maybe they're a little bit underrated right now.
I think Kyle Isbell, which that's their third round pick. So that's a guy that everybody kind of knows about. So just kind of talk about him. He's a real grinder. I think you're looking at maybe a Whit Merrifield replacement there. I know a lot of people talk about him having 15-20 home run power. I don't really buy that playing in the Mountain West. That conference is known for home runs and power, and his power just came on this year. But he's still a guy that can play center field, play on the dirt, play at second base, and good run, kind of a grinder guy, I think. Maybe you got another Whit Merrifield there that can replace Whit whenever they look to trade him. So that's a guy that's pretty exciting. Their fifth-round pick, Austin Cox, out of Mercer. I think he was the number two strikeout guy among left-handed starters. And he's really exciting. Over-the-top delivery, throws up into the mid-90s, throws a hammer 12-6 curveball that a lot of guys project already is above major league average, has a little bit of a changeup, just needs to learn to attack more from the way it sounds when I talked with his coach. Wasn't really, he walked like 4 per 9, which that's not great, but he said it was more about him nibbling and them as a program working around the better hitters they face, as opposed to him just having the stuff to, you know, to miss. He pulled out Sean Manaea. Basically, this coach has seen Chris Sale, Sean Manaea, and Cal Freeland. And he said, you know, he's not Chris Sale, but I'll put him on par with Manaea and Freeland, which is pretty, you know, that's a pretty high comparison right there. And then if you get it in the back half of the draft, I like Michael Imode out of Creighton. Reminds me a lot of John Buck. This is a big body catcher with a good arm, pretty good. Despite being so big, receives the ball well, can hit it. I mean, he can really hit it far, but has trouble with the breaking ball a little bit longer swing. I mean, I don't like to compare players to former players, but that just screams of John Buck. And I've seen him play, and he plays just like that guy. I know Nicky Lopez, his former teammate's a big fan of him. And then you keep going down the line. There's some other guys in there. Hunter Wolf, pretty intriguing at Walter State. Shortstop, can swing the bat a little bit, has a good feel for the barrel. And then you kind of go along down the road. There's some other guys. I think you're going to have if they can get Milan Walla in the mix, the center fielder from Texas in the 15th round. He's got a lot of speed. Can hit. Obviously, in Texas, you play against upper-level competition. So he might be a nice add as a high school guy. And then they added a lot of kids. They added three guys from Central Arkansas. So their scout there, Matt Price, he must have really liked that program, but to get those three different guys. And I already talked to their coach about the seventh-round pick, so I'll have to call him up and ask him about the other guys, too. So, It's a pretty conservative draft in general, but what they've done well in the past is finding relievers out of college guys. So maybe some of these guys in the mix here in the later rounds turn into a nice reliever or two. So we'll see.
So with, I noticed they took a good chunk of, or at least they went on a run where they took a lot of JUCO guys too, and they've had some success in that area as well. I mean, are any of those guys? I mean, you mentioned Hunter Wolf, but I mean, when they're looking at JUCO guys, and when I guess any team really is looking at JUCO guys, like is that more they got to just look for tools, right? I mean, there's not a great amount of competition at that level, is there?
There's more than you think. You know, you got Sanjack, where they got Rylan Kaufman out. That's out of Texas. There's some pretty decent clubs down there. I think you're definitely dealing with better, you know, better competition than what you would see on the high school level. And some of those kids are guys that transfer back. They go to D1 programs and transfer back, or maybe they just didn't have, you know, the grades, or they want to play pro ball and didn't like what they were looking at after that first year. So I think you got a couple guys there. The Royals have been, that's probably one of the better things that they do in the draft is recognize JUCO guys for whatever reason. Maybe it's that extra year of development. I don't know why, but they've gotten pretty good at that. I mean, you got Daniel Stump was a JUCO guy. I think Strom was a JUCO guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Daniel Tillo, one of their better pitchers right now. He was at Iowa Western. He was a JUCO guy. Then they've had other guys too that I just can't think of off the top of my head. So, yeah, they've done pretty well with that phylum of guys, especially on the pitching side of it. And a lot of those programs, I mean, when you're looking at the elite of the elite programs in JUCO, Chipolo, Sanjack, Iowa Western, those programs are running out 2 to 3 arms that are pretty dynamic arms that you can see, hey, these guys they need to be in a minor league system. And so the lower JUCO guy teams aren't quite there, but Walter State that Hunter Wolf played for, I'm pretty sure they were in the JUCO World Series this year. So he's seen some pretty high level competition playing to that level.
So one person I wanted to ask about, he was kind of one of the later picks for the Royals, but a little bit of a local tie coming from Hickman, Columbia Hickman in Missouri, Trey Robertson, just cause he's a local guy. What do you really know about him? Is he, what can you tell us about him and his game?
I don't really know much about him, to be honest with you. I don't. The local guys, unless I kind of get somebody that kind of tells me about him, then, you know, because I'm not in your guys' area.
Right.
I'm the north here, so I don't. A lot of those guys will fall through the cracks on for me. But typically, for whatever reason, the Royals haven't done a great job of bringing those guys into the fold. And there's guys that I've liked in that area that for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to sign. So I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't get signed, just because, I mean, other than Jason Adam, there hasn't been many that they've really signed from the local area. And I can give you a quick rundown here. I can tell you a little bit about him if there's any info. He's from Perfect Game. I can give you guys what they have on him. He's going.
Yeah.
He's a Mizzou commit. So getting him signed from there. That's one thing that the Royals had a guy recently, Cameron Meisner, that is killing it at Mizzou that they drafted and couldn't bring into the fold. Another one of those guys, like I was talking about, that is probably he's working himself into a first round pick that the Royals drafted in the 20s. I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah. The 16 draft that they took Lee, they took Meisner in the 20s somewhere and didn't bring him in the fold. But let me see here. Not a whole lot of info on this kid.
Okay, no big deal. I just wanted to see if you knew much about him, since he's kind of a local guy. I don't know if people who might be interested or might be listening to the show would be interested.
Oh,
but
basically 88-89. He had 11 strikeouts on this day. 88-89, touches 90. Kind of fell off into the 85-88 range. And pretty tall and lean kid, 6'5", 190 pounds. So he's a, you know, he's a development piece. Commands his pitch as well. You know, I could, for a kid like that, I could make some calls. Looks like he's got an upper 70s curveball. I just haven't had a chance to yet to call around on and talk to those guys, to the guys I know in the area that see the prep guys. But, yeah, it's just your typical development piece. I mean, all these guys that they took this year, I mean, they're so tall and lean, 6'5", 180. And I mean, Coar is 6'5", 180. Lynch is 6'6", 190. I mean, Singer's got a little bit more muscle on him. He's 210, but 6'5". I mean, it's just a run after run of 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", guys that are pitchers. So it's a pretty interesting group.
Yeah, they got a lot of tall pitchers and a lot of, like, 5'11 outfielders mixed in there.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird grouping.
Yeah, yeah, playing to the type. Well, we'll just maybe a couple questions here, and we'll let you get out of here. I mean, is there a favorite pick? It sounds like Cower is the guy you really like out of this group. But is that your favorite, or is there any other pick that you like particularly more?
Yeah, I'd say Jackson Coar is my favorite pick. If you go online, there's plenty of video of him. Basically, he operates with a four seam and a two seam. His four seam's pretty straight, but he can run it up to 98. His two seam is 92 to 94 with a lot of downward movement fade. And his changeup, he's got a pro changeup already. Same thing, a lot of downward movement and fade to the arm side. And then the curveball is coming. It's a pro curveball too. A lot of still 12-6 movement, 1-7 kind of in there. The thing about Jackson that's intriguing and why I like him the most, he's, like I said, he's lean. He's 6'5", 180 pounds. And he's not going to add a ton of weight, but he could add some muscle. His legs look rail thin. And then he doesn't use the back half very much at all as far as driving forward. And so I think we know the Royals haven't developed real well, and it'll be interesting to see if they do this with him. But he's got development that he can do as far as using that leg to drive off and staying a little bit closed instead of rotating and tossing his trunk out too far. And, I mean, for a kid to already be throwing 92 to 98 with using just such an effortless throw motion, it's very impressive. I think there's a lot of upside there, and if obviously things have to go right, but you just don't find guys with that much movement on their pitches already and still have some upside and to add velocity and maintain it. I think what happens a lot of times in his outings, why he hasn't dominated with the stuff he has, is that I think he just loses his stuff fairly quickly because he's not physically in the shape to maintain it. So he's definitely the most exciting guy. Chris Bubik, I think, could be one of the faster moving guys. You're talking about a really above average changeup and a good enough fastball. I mean, it's not a great fastball. It's about 92 is where it peaks. Peaks at 94, but usually sits 90, 92. But very Clayton Kershaw-esque motion. Has the delayed draw back with his hand, a funky leg kick. Likes to pause mid-motion. I think he's going to jack with minor league hitters pretty poor. Pretty. I mean, he'll be pulling the string on, you know, A-ball and high-A guys regularly with his changeup because it is that good. It's got fade. It's got mirroring arm speed, and he's already pausing mid-delivery and giving them a leg kick. And I just don't think he'll last in the low minors. I think he'll see the high minors rather fast. But then he levels out. I don't think he's not an upper rotation guy, but he could be a back end guy. And we'll see on Daniel Lynch. I mean, we'll see. I'm not super sold like everybody else is. I'm probably more sold on Austin Cox than I am Daniel Lynch. But we'll see. I know the Royals were really excited about Kevon Jackson too. 5'9", 180 pounds. God, he's just 2001 birthday in January.
Wow.
Still 17. Football player in high school a little bit. Ran track. I know he didn't practice track, but he took second in state in the 100. he's your typical blazing fast kid, and he wants to play baseball. And the Royals kind of, they think they snuck him away from everybody because they weren't running a bunch of guys in to see him all the time. So they think they really got a gem there. We'll see. You know how they like those fast guys. He kind of, the way Lonnie described him kind of sounds like a right-handed hitting Rudy Martin, pretty physical kid who's blazing fast. So that's an interesting set of tools there to watch for.
So finally, I think we'll just wrap up with this. You know, you've given lots of thoughts, and you've called the draft, you know, kind of conservative, and we've talked about how it's not necessarily sexy, but could still be a good draft. So I don't know if you want to give like a number or a grade or anything, but as far as just your overall assessment goes, sounds like you obviously think it's pretty conservative, but are you excited for what they did, or you think it's, you know, does this draft have a chance of rebolstering the farm system as they move forward, or is it maybe just kind of underwhelming?
Here's what I'll say is, and Leskie pointed this out to me because I wasn't even paying attention to it at the time, is that if we look at other teams in the league and who they drafted, this one, they weren't the only team not picking high school guys. So everybody talks about ceiling. Well, if the Cubs only took a couple within the first 30 rounds, the Rockies did only a couple within the first 30 rounds. I think Washington only took three or four. So perhaps this was just a year where the talent wasn't there. And so what the Royals did, if you're evaluating it off that, then what the Royals did was the correct move, because like I said, I love Kowar, I love his ceiling. And I mean, when you talk about Brady Singer, you can't put together a better resume than what Brady has. I mean, he was drafted in the second round out of high school for Toronto. He passed on signing with them. So then he goes to Florida. His freshman year, he works from the bullpen on a team that went to the College World Series. And he was a regular bullpen piece they used. After his freshman year, after they made a run, he couldn't pitch much at the Cape, but he did show up there. And what was he? He was the number one prospect at the Cape. In just like five starts, they said, well, this guy's easily the best prospect that's here. And then from there, what he do? He goes next year. Last year, he gave the most innings on the national championship team and was on the he wasn't the outstanding pitcher of the series, but he was on the all-tournament team with 21 strikeouts in 14 innings. And then this year, he comes back and he's Baseball America's College Player of the Year. So I don't know. Just for a resume, you can't do much more.
It's true.
Yeah, sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, you just can't do much more than that. And so when I wasn't excited and other guys aren't, I put that on myself. But I do put on the other guys too that we're all listening to. But really, we should be excited by that pick. I mean, that's a hell of a resume. And, you know, maybe he's only a number three starter. Maybe he's a reliever. Isn't that fine? I mean, I don't think, as long as he doesn't get injured, he's going to be a major leaguer. And so, I mean, I think that a lot of times we get rolled into looking at players and thinking, oh, they need to be superstars. I mean, I was just having a debate about Aaron Crow the other day with Sean Newcourt. And Aaron Crow is fine. He was the 12th pick, and he gave you three quality years of relief pitching, and then he blew out his arm in the fourth year, and he was done. In the grand scheme of things, in the 50 or 60 years of drafting that's went on, he gave you the 19th best performance at the 12th pick. Would you want more? Yes. All greedy. We're all greedy. Yes, we want more, but that's fine. And that's all you want from Brady Singer. And yes, you want more, but they need three pitchers here. They need three guys that give them major league quality contribution. If they don't do that, if they don't get that, or three players, I should say, because Isbell, I think, will give you that. I think they need to find three guys here. And if they do that, that's good enough for me. It might not be good enough for others, but to me, that's all you want. I think you got to have one good starter here. If you get, I don't think they have a major league regular position player, but I think Isbell could be a nice utility option. And guy, maybe he does become a wit. And then I think you got to have another bullpen piece or two. And that's good enough for me. It might not be good enough for others, but you know, obviously I want more. I'd love to have an ace, but who knows? You're picking at 18. You're not picking at one. So
that's true.
Fair enough. Well, we'll leave you there, Clint. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're it's your busiest time of year here with as far as your writing and everything goes. So really appreciate you peeling off a few minutes to come talk to us about it and a couple weeks ago as well. So we'll let you go. Have yourself a great evening, and thanks again for coming on. We really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Anytime. Sorry for ranting a little bit there, but
it's fair. That's what we do too.
Yep. All right. So with that, we'll wrap up the show. Another big thank you to Clint Scholes. This is, as we mentioned, Craig Brown has jokingly called it the Christmas for Clint. So thanks to him for taking some time out of this busy schedule this time of year to sit with us and talk about the Royals draft. And, you know, it's as he said, and as others have said, you know, it's not super sexy, but it's could be good. And it's at least interesting. You know, there are some picks, and, you know, I do think he brought up a good point that we kind of, our expectations dictate things and feelings about a draft that necessarily maybe aren't necessarily the right way to go about it. So, you know, specifically talking about the Singer pick, you know, where, okay, people were maybe thinking a different direction. And so that's why they're not excited, but it should be an exciting pick because he's got his degree has, you know, Clint listed off all the different things for his such a great resume. So that's definitely, you know, always good to have someone like him who can kind of take a step back and put things into perspective for us. So if, you know, regardless of who was there, who wasn't there, whatever the case may be, you know, that's a good pick. And mm-hmm. The Royals made a lot of good picks, and, you know, they're not the flashiest or whatever, but as Clint said, you know, maybe that's just the type of year the type of draft that they had this year. There wasn't any super sexy, or a ton of super sexy options that you could just pick up and everyone would get excited about. So, yeah. But it's thank you so much for Clint to have us on the show, and we'll be back next week, and we'll talk. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a little bit more details on the John Jay trade, and who knows? Maybe they'll make another trade. Maybe this will start just boom. They'll start rocking them.
Like we're open for business out there.
Open for business. Come on over. You know, just hey, we'll trade you Alcides Escobar for some grass patches that can go on our outfield. We just had some fire.
Yes.
So maybe.
So hopefully we'll have some Scots.
Yes, Scott's turf building. So thank you for. We'll have hopefully some interesting things to talk about in that regard. Until then, I will see you next week. Be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn. Obviously, this time of year, it's fantastic. Go sit on the deck, go hang out, watch some Royals games, do whatever you want to do. It's always the good time is always amplified by being at Kelly's. And also be sure to visit BP Kansas City. Of course, the mothership, if you will, and especially soon, either sometime tonight or tomorrow morning, I know we'll have something. We'll have a write up on the John Jay trade, what happened, who got, you know, we talked about him a little bit on the show, but a little bit more analysis on who the back and everything else. So definitely check that out, as well as, you know, continued draft analysis from Clint as he, you know, continues to give his thoughts on what happened, even beyond what he just shared with us on the show. So thanks again to Clint, and thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be back again. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.